You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
One of the great nicknames in NBA history, he is 3D, Dennis Scott, one of the great deep shooters in NBA history, part of Turner Sports NBA analyst. Who gave you that nickname, 3D?
Down in Orlando, Paul Porter, the PA announcer. We're playing against the San Antonio Spurs in the preseason game. I came down, hit a three in the corner. He said, "Great, Scott." I said, "Well, that's what they called me at Georgia Tech." Then I came down again and hit another three. And he said, "Dennis Scott." And then I made three threes, and I think in a minute and a half, he goes, "Wait a minute, 3D. And I kind of looked over him. I said, "I like that." The rest is history.
But when you miss those shots in a game, did you ever get somebody to say, "Oh, yeah, 3D?
Of course, you get that from a few fans on the road, and you love it. But Dan, you've been knowing me a long time. All of us great shooters have a mindset. If you miss two or three, we always believe the next one's going in.
All right, let's look at some of this action here. How much pressure is on Kevin Durant now, given Kyrie's availability and no James Harden?
I don't know if it's pressure. I don't know if it's desperation. Because we all know now, if you're not healthy in the playoffs and you don't have your best players, it's hard to beat people. And Durant, we know how he wears his emotions on his sleeve. So he's going to try to do everything possible to try to carry this team, which I think he needs to take a step back and empower his teammates around him with leadership and say, "Hey, guys, I'm not going to try to get 60. Yes, maybe 40, but I need to get 10, 15 assists like James Harden does, get you guys involved. Let's play good team defense, and maybe we can hold on to Kyrie or James Harden get healthy."
What do you think of the Bucks' defensive strategy? Are they going over the top with their physicality here?
No, they're not. You have to take offensive players out of their comfort zone. We know Kyrie's a great player. We know James Harden's a great player. We know KD's one of the best scorers we ever see it. But you have to be physical with them and take them out of their comfort zone and take them and make them do things they're not used to. Kevin Durant is not used to a guy named PJ Tucker just all in his face. He's smaller, but he's stronger. And that's the physicality you're talking about, Dan.
How do they let Kevin Durant's bodyguard on the court?
I think the whole situation with the fans, personal security, they're not on the same page, Dan. I don't mind players having extra security. They deserve it. I don't mind arenas beefing up extra security for the playoffs. But we all have to be on the same page and know who is who. Come to find out, some people didn't know that was Durant security, was that James Harden security. We didn't know who it was. We just know it was the guy that was dressed up real big, trying to do the right thing, but he didn't. I'm glad he didn't go overboard.
Did you ever have an incident like that where somebody's on the floor and you don't know who it is and why they're on the floor?
No, it was one time in Phoenix because, you know, obviously playing with Shaq. Everywhere we went, something crazy would happen. And then this guy ran on the fence, Shaq, I love you. And, of course, security said, "Get out of here."
Shaq was crazy. The stories I hear about Shaq, young Shaq at practice,
yes,
like he would run out with just his shoes on. Is that true?
Just his shoes and his birthday suit.
You're not going to take a charge from him.
No, you're like, no, you're the guy. I'm not taking a charge of your birthday suit.
Oh, what a goofball! Would you have tossed the Joker?
I would have not have tossed the Joker. I understand the rules. I understand what Adam Silver and the Brain Trust is trying to do is to keep the game calm. But we know the Joker was not trying to aim for Cam's face. We know he was trying to do a hard foul. If he gets the ball, gets the steal, we're yelling, "Oh, my God, great steal by the Joker." He's trying to get back in the ball game. It's an unfortunate situation. I don't want fans to put a smear over his MVP season off of one little small incident that it wasn't that serious, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think it was how it looked, though, Dennis. And
right. Yes.
And he was frustrated. You got his coach who's calling out his own team saying they quit. And I think it's probably the Joker saying, let me try to make something happen. My point is, you're the MVP. You can't be in a position to all of a sudden have a hard foul on somebody. You can't risk that. And that's my problem with it. And would I have tossed him? No, but he put himself in a position where he got tossed, and I blamed him for that.
Yeah, I think that's a great learning experience for him now that he's turned that corner to be a true superstar. because the last couple of years, so many people didn't want to give him his flowers, as we say, or excuse me, his roses, as they say, while he's alive. But he's proven he's a true superstar, a true MVP. He'll learn from his incident and move on and still be a great player.
If you watch him, how about this? If you were just going to explain why the Joker is so effective and somebody didn't see him, how would you explain what he does? Because he can't jump. He's not quick. He's strong. He's got great eyes, great hands. But how do you explain somebody who does what he does?
Well, Dan, I said again, you know me a long time. You know, back in the day, when you come to our game, it's just like now, music, right? Everyone listening to music, you get hyped up. Well, I tell people, when you're watching the Joker, turn the music down. Because the music is low for him. It's between the ears. He understands where he wants to get on the floor. He knows the offense. He knows all four players who are on the floor, where they like the ball, where they want to cut, and where they need the ball. So the defense is, oh, you're going to pressure up on me? I'll take my time, use my body, use my methodical dribble, and let my players cut. And if you make a mistake on defense, I'll find it. And that's the best way to explain it, because to your point, he's not living on the rim. He's not sprinting down the court, but the shots go in. He makes smart passes, and he's always in the right spot on defense to help his teammates.
He's Dennis Scott, Turner Sports NBA analyst. The coverage continues tonight on TNT, Sixers, Hawks, and then it'll be Jazz and the Clippers. You know what to expect out of the Clippers, Dennis?
No, I don't, because I was on that series with the Mavericks, and I saw what Luka Doncic was doing to the Clippers, so I was a little nervous for them. And I was saying to myself, if the Dallas Mavericks front office would have made a few better moves, they'd be in the second round. They need another shooter or two to make a few more shots, and the Clippers would be on vacation. On the flip side of that, Ty Lue, because we know he didn't panic, he went to Luke Kennard. And we always like, Luke Kennard, Lue, what are you doing? He's not going to help you. Oh, wait a minute, three, energy. And next thing you know, they advance. So with that being said, I agree with you earlier before I came on. I don't know if Reggie Jackson can continue to make shots, because he is shooting the blood out of the basketball. I'm very happy for him. If he can continue that, along with playoff P, not pandemic P, then I think Clipper Nation could be excited and possibly going forward.
You have the 76ers and the Hawks, and with, you know, Joel Embiid is, you know, going to be limited a little bit, although it hadn't really shown that much. But that mentality that Trae Young has, you're not supposed to have that at this age. But he's not afraid.
No, Dan, I just love this generation. Very similar to Devin Booker, where we're saying that, oh, you got to get in the playoffs, you got to lose a round, or you got to be like we were in Orlando, you got to get swept your first time you go to the playoffs. These guys said, no, we don't believe in that narrative. I want to win now. And the front office in Atlanta, in my opinion, has done a better job putting better players around Trae Young versus Dallas with Luka. Mm. And that's why you see the Hawks soaring, sharing the basketball, like Donovan shooting threes and telling the crowd shit, almost picking his nose, all that fun stuff. The Hawks have had this much fun. Even when they won the 60-game season, they're having more fun now back when they had 60 games.
I mentioned this earlier about Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis has to reinvest in his body the way LeBron has, because I don't think Anthony Davis came into this season in shape and it caught up to him. Do you see a correlation between he's sort of always banged up and, I mean, at this age, you're not supposed to be as banged up as he is. So what would you do?
I would take a page right out of your locker mate right there with LeBron. Like you said, I think LeBron spends $1.5 million a year between the nutritionist and the acupuncture and the training. So, yes, you have to do that at this point in your career. And you may give him a pass, LeBron, Miami, even Denver for a certain extent, because all those guys were in the bubble deep into last season. They had to come right back. But bigger picture to your narrative, no, AD, they brought you there for a reason. You're trying to extend LeBron's career a couple extra years. You have to be top notch.
Explain to me Chris Paul.
Special. As Charles likes to say, and most people say, one of the best leaders to ever put on a pair of tennis shoes. And I'm just happy for him that this point in his career, that he's staying healthy, last night, I must admit, we were all sitting there saying, Monty, you're up 8 or 9. Don't you want to get him out the game before he bumps a pinky toe or a pinky finger or something? But to Chris Paul's credit, he's like, no, leave me in the game. I want to make sure we win because I get a whole week off to continue all the treatment I've been doing through this playoff to keep my body right.
But he's been on multiple teams here. So when he says after the game, hey, people thought I was washed, you know, a year ago. Well, yeah. I mean, as great as he is, and he deserved to be a top three MVP candidate, he hasn't won. And then you have Michael Malone, the Nuggets head coach, who says he's arguably the best point guard of all time. And I went, Michael, did you ever see Magic? I mean, there's no argument here.
Right. Right. No, I agree with you. I think Michael Malone, throughout the playoffs, has admitted that sometimes his emotions gets the best of him after games through his press conference. So we both know Michael Malone a long time. I think he'd wake up in the morning over a cup of coffee and say, okay, guys, I'm a little in my feelings. We know Magic's still the best point guard to ever live.
But, okay, is Chris Paul better than Russell Westbrook on the all-time list?
As a player, yes. And stat numbers, no. Because we've seen Chris Paul go to multiple teams and make the team better. And I think that's where the minutia kind of confuses people. Are we talking about explosive? Russell Westbrook. Are we talking about better athletes? Russell Westbrook. Are we talking about obviously the most triple-doubles in our era? Russell Westbrook. When we're talking about what Chris Paul did in OKC with that young team and made them better, those are the things I think most of us would give Chris Paul the nod as the overall better point guard. Better. Numbers, Russell Westbrook. Point guard, Chris Paul.
Better than John Stockton?
Ooh, I still got John Stockton. I mean, when you look at that assist record, that alone, I don't think one of the few records in sports, I don't think nobody get, even though what Russell's doing, I don't think nobody get cerebral, the screen setting, the leadership. And I think, Dan, what we're all trying to figure out is, how come guys like John Stockton, the Karl Malones of the world, with all the great play, they don't have a ring?
Yeah.
And I think that's to this question where we're going. If Chris Paul gets a ring, as we know in the media, his narrative will change a whole lot.
1995 playoffs, you were with Orlando, you beat the Bulls. Did you think you'd won the championship by beating the Bulls? Because you went on and you guys lost to the Rockets. But did that kind of like, we beat Jordan and now we got the Rockets?
And you remember that same year, Dan, we had game 7 at home against the Indiana Pacers, who had just swept us the year before. So we had two like roller coasters, like, yes, we just beat Mike. Oh, my goodness, we just beat Reggie, yes. Oh, we got the Rockets. Oh, we beat them both times in the regular season. We should be okay. We're young. We're exuberant. Oh, smack, 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 smack.
But you can say you beat the Bulls in the playoffs there, Dennis.
And when the Jordan series came out, everyone's texting, oh, man, you're the only one ever beat the Bulls back in the day. Yeah, we got our ass kicked in the bag on Rockets a few weeks later.
How mad was Jordan after Orlando beat the Bulls?
He was hot. I mean, it was well known, you know, when Nick Anderson, you know, made the comment, you know, 45, not quite like 23. Like, no. But we knew Mike was going to come back and change, get his body right after coming back from baseball. We knew that. We know what type of competitor he was.
And then you got swept by the Bulls the next year.
The very next year, we're rolling, having a great year. I think we're second in the East. And we're like, uh-oh, he's got that look in his eye.
We've seen that look. We've seen
yes,
that.
Yes, we have.
Yeah, we've seen
that. And it's a different look. And I think Kobe had it. And I think watching Devin Booker and the little exchange with him and LeBron with the jersey, and LeBron was honest. Devin's different. Devin's ready. Devin's not just happy to be here. He's not just happy to possibly get this new max contract. He wants to win and be the next guy we talk about every day.
I was wondering about this, Dennis. Devin Booker owns the last game-worn jersey of LeBron James wearing number 23 because he's switching back to 6. So
can you imagine
with all of these prices for trading cards and memorabilia, what is the last game-worn LeBron jersey where he had number 23 going to be worth 10 years, 15 years, 20 years?
if LeBron stays healthy, say LeBron comes back, we know LeBron's going to do whatever to get his body right. And hopefully, and I like, because I know Rob Pelinka, so I can go ahead and say this out for you, for our viewers. Pressure is on Rob Pelinka now. Mm-hmm. You let Rondo go for Dennis Schroeder. It didn't work. You let JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard walk. You brought in Montrezl Harrell and Gasol. It did not work. LeBron is not 21 anymore. As much as we love what he's doing at his age, we know Father Time is still undefeated. We just talked about AD taking care of his body. Rob Pelinka has to put the right vets and the right shot makers around both of these guys. Otherwise, Laker Nation is going to be in trouble the next couple of years.
Great to catch up with you. As always there, Dennis, thanks for joining us.
Come on. I got the phone call. I said, Dan, I said, no problem, baby. I love my guy.
Thank you, buddy. That's right, buddy. Dennis Scott, one of the few guests who's a better shooter than me. The Turner Sports NBA playoff coverage continues tonight on TNT with Sixers Hawks at 7:30, Jazz Clippers at 10:30. He's likely better than
me. That's a major honor. That's a hell of a statement for you to make.
Dennis Scott had a beautiful shot. Beautiful shot. Sort of a Del Curry set shot, a little bit. Beautiful.
Paul's checking his notes to see if you've ever said that before.
I'm checking. Better shooter than me has never been said in the history of this show by you.
And I give it to Reggie. Reggie's a better shooter than me. No, he is.
Give it to Ray Allen.
I did. I just questioned where the ball was
that's
on
enough.
His hand.
You told him he was doing it wrong.
I know.
I think that's... Enough of a statement.
I question Ray Allen's form. That's all. That's
it's great.
If you could have seen the Danettes' faces when I said to Ray Allen, because I said, hold the ball. And I always say, you know, do you want to put a finger underneath the ball on your hand so you could slip a finger in there? You want it on your fingertips. And Ray put it there, and I said, the ball's on your palm. I said, you're holding it wrong.
Not holding it weird, holding it oddly, holding it wrong.
Holding it wrong,
which
Ray.
Means if he would have done it a different way, he'd been a better shooter.
Yes.
You know, you're doing that wrong.
Yeah. And he's like,
excuse me?
What? What?
Hey, Da Vinci, give me the paintbrush. I got to show you what you're doing.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. You had some tennis yesterday that I was watching, and I was kind of going in and out. You got Djokovic, who won the French Open, his 19th major, and that's one shy of the all-time record. That's currently shared by Roger Federer and Rafa Nadal. And Djokovic is 34 and has a great chance to surpass his two longtime foes. You know, we spent a lot of time talking about Tiger Woods chasing Jack Nicklaus and that major. But in America, men's tennis majors aren't a topic. That's because none of the big three are American. And we've invested in Serena Williams. But it's a tricky record to wrap your head around. Is Djokovic better than Pete Sampras or Rod Laver or Bjorn Borg? The sport they play today is a whole lot different than it was 30 or 40 years ago. Health, medicine allow these players to compete for a longer period of time. And the rackets certainly help as well. We all know for sure that Djokovic is an all-time player and all-time athlete, no matter how much we do or don't talk about tennis and him. Also, to be able to do it in the era where you have Nadal and Federer, who have won 39 majors between them. And then you get Djokovic, it's pretty incredible that you're able to win. It'd be like if somebody played in the Tiger Woods era and they won 9 majors, but they didn't, you know, because Tiger just dominated everybody. These are two of the greatest players of all time. You can make a case that Federer is the greatest player of all time, but in his era, Djokovic has 19 Grand Slams. Having rivals helps. Didn't feel like Pete Sampras had a rival there. Connors, McEnroe, Bjorn Borg, Yvonne Lendl. You know, having that rivalry, that's what you want. Chris Everett with Martina. I don't know if Serena's really had a rival But to be able to have that rivalry makes those victories stand out even more. And you have Nadal, who's the greatest clay court player of all time, and you dust him off in four sets. Federer, to me, is still the greatest player. Although you can make a case in a different era, Rod Laver was the greatest player of all time. But with what Federer, and I, the reason why I go back to Federer is when I asked Pete Sampras about this years ago, I said, you know, what do you think of Federer? And he said, he will attempt shots that I can't even think about. Like, I don't even have that in my imagination. And he's attempting those shots and pulling those off. That says an awful lot about, you know, here's Sampras with, what, 16 Grand Slam events, looking at Roger Federer, and just the fact that what he does, how he does it, he's doing things that I wouldn't even think of doing as far as a shot there. But Djokovic is incredible. I mean, it didn't look like he was working up a sweat. And he always looks like he's visiting a country club. He's going in to play tennis at the club. You know, his shorts are, you know, perfectly starched and creases, and his shirt that he was wearing, his hair. He doesn't look out of sorts at all, whereas Nadal did. Nadal looked like he had played, you know, 10 sets. But that's pretty impressive. That's 19 majors. He's 34 years of age. But to have these three, that's remarkable. I mean, you go back to boxing where you had Sugar Ray, Tommy Hearns, you had Marvelous Marvin Hagler. Like, to win titles in that era, because that's who you had to go through, that's pretty incredible. Now, they don't face each other as many times as you do in tennis, but what Djokovic did yesterday was pretty pretty impressive. Yeah, Paul.
You're right about Djokovic. He doesn't seem to be a big sweater. And he, remember, early in his career, he went up top button. He used to have, like, the polo shirt. And he was so composed, he would go top button. Like, I don't even need to unbutton twice to get you, take you down. I'm looking at pictures of him. He looks like it's a fifth set, and he looks like he's just starting the match.
Don't make me unbutton this next button. I don't want to do that to you.
No time.
Yeah. Yes, McLovin.
So I think this is an appropriate, impossible to rate athlete. Like, if we put a poll, is he overrated, underrated, properly rated, or impossible to rate? Because if he passes Federer in the major record, do we have to say he's better than Federer? Or, and you said it, you can't compare him to Rod Laver. I think he's impossible to rate.
Yeah, I think I would say Federer is still the best player that I've seen on all the surfaces, his athleticism. But Nadal fascinates me, probably more one-dimensional with clay. And that's what stood out even more, is that he lost on clay. He doesn't lose on clay. And the fact that Djokovic was able to beat him in four sets was really remarkable. And Djokovic was down two sets yesterday. So you're down 0-2. And then all of a sudden it's like, all right. Like, gave the crowd, you know, it's almost like when Floyd Mayweather carried one of the Paul brothers. Like, you're just like, yeah, all right, I think it's time to end this now. We're done. And he just went boom, 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 and that was it. All right, we'll get to phone calls, best and worst of the weekend, what we saw that we liked, we didn't like. The Packers continue to make things worse. Oh, I saw this with Mark Murphy is the CEO of the Packers, and he's at some fan event. You know, a lot of times when you go to these things, you go to a luncheon, there's no cameras, you get a little loose sometimes. You know, you're playing to a hometown crowd. This is Mark Murphy, who's already said that Aaron Rodgers, what's going on is dividing our fan base. If somebody has a cell phone, they start to record this, and then he's quoting the late GM, Ted Thompson, where Ted Thompson referred to Aaron Rodgers as complicated. That's not a compliment. When you say somebody is complicated, and you're quoting somebody who's not around to even put it into context, how do you think Aaron Rodgers is going to take that? Like, you've already said, you know what, he's dividing our fan base. Okay. Now you're quoting Ted Thompson saying Aaron Rodgers is complicated. Complicated is unique is a compliment. Hey, man, he's unique. Complex is almost a compliment.
Right.
Yeah, like, he's complex. But when you say, you know, quoting Ted Thompson here, he's complicated. That's not a compliment. Yes, Todd.
To me, that's annoying or strange, or I just don't get that guy. All, again, in the negative vein.
Maybe so, but don't say it. Like, it feels like these are really, there should be trepidation with what you say anywhere to anybody about this situation here. Do I think he's going to be traded? I don't. Do I think he's with the Packers next season? Probably not. But I've said all along, I don't think he's going to be traded because he can't trade himself. And the Packers are not going to trade Aaron Rodgers. But we're going to get to the point in a couple of weeks now where we're going to find out how awkward this is really going to be. But don't quote anybody. Don't say anything. How about you keep it generic? And he's, you know, as Ted Thompson said, he's complicated. Okay. Yeah, Paul.
I just checked the chart. He's complicated is just one above. He's a handful. He's a handful is the next step down from he's complicated. He's complex is a step up because it made you think that he's cerebral and smart. He's a handful is on the negative side.
I wonder if he rolled his eyes when he said it. He's complicated.
Yes, if you roll the eyes, that exacerbates he's a handful.
Yes,
he's close to being known as a piece of work.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a piece of work.
Right. A piece of work is down from he's a handful.
Yes, Todd.
It doesn't make it okay, but it's easy to get loose in these things as opposed to when you're at a press conference and you got mic flags in front of you and everything and you're maybe more guarded on what you're going to say because it's obvious that every little facial expression and word you're going to say is going to be all over the radio and TV and the newspapers. When you're at some sports bar at some convention or a speaking engagement, you don't realize that all of a sudden this same thing could get picked up by a lot of people.
Well, if he doesn't realize that, then he's very naive. And everybody's got a cell phone. And, you know, somebody's going to tell somebody, oh, yeah, he referred to Aaron Rodgers, said he's complicated. Maybe they didn't even get the quoting the former GM Ted Thompson with the Packers, putting it in context. It doesn't matter. You called him complicated. But if you say he's complicated, and but I mean that in a positive way because there's so many facets to him and he's got so many interests and he's such a thought-provoking guy. Like you could spin it, call your wife complicated, see how that works. Hey, honey, you know what? You're complicated. How about you call her high maintenance while you're at it? Yeah, Paul.
Thank you all for coming to this Packers booster event. We're going to have a great season. Everyone put their phones away. It's just us chatting here. Yeah. Can't wait to get rid of that old guy, get Jordan Love into the lineup. Don't tell anybody. Yep. Just us talking.
Hey, you know what? He is complicated.
Bar is open.
Yeah. Get some phone calls here. By the way, don't miss the Peacock original, The Greatest Race. Discover the teammates who pulled off an astonishing comeback in the 4x100 relay, the 2008 Beijing Olympics. It's The Greatest Race. And it's streaming now only on Peacock. Sign up at PeacockTV.com to get started. Let's see. Jeremy in Alabama leads us off this hour. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi, Dan. Thank you for taking the call. I am 6'2 and a half and a lean 200 pounds. Mm-hmm. I've got two best, and I want to pay tribute to Todd Fritz with a mock headline.
Oh, okay.
My best one is the Suns winning. When the Lakers went out, I'm all in on watching the playoffs. Pulling for the Suns because I used to – Thunder Dan Marley was my man back in the day, and I always loved the Suns. My second best was I got a chance to hang out this weekend in Nashville with Bradley Constant. He plays the high school-aged Rock on Young Rock. Super cool dude. That was awesome. And my mock headline is mediocre. Nuggets get swept by the Suns.
Okay. Yoker. Mediocre.
Mediocre.
Okay. I like that. All right.
Nicely done.
Todd, any response?
I just had the one. I think I sent you guys out last night. As soon as it happened, I thought of ejected as opposed to ejected.
I'm into
it. Got mixed reviews.
I like it. It made me laugh.
Okay. I'm going to say thumbs down. Yeah,
I was proud of that for a little while, and then instead of reading the positive ones, you look on, you know, Facebook or Twitter, and then you read the negative ones, and those are the ones that eat you up, and you forget about anybody that said it was anything good.
Can you let it eat you up that you just put out a mock headline?
Unfortunately for me and my sensitivity level, you want everyone to like it and give you smiley faces and roses.
It doesn't work that way.
Rather get no reaction or, you know, that clever or I like that one or good job. But once you get the, you know, different GIFs or GIFs and images, and it gets a little mean out there in the social media landscape.
I know you were pouting on Friday due to your limerick.
I was a little bit because I think we egged that on a little bit. I believe sometimes our reaction is that, you know, some of the trolls on social media, they're waiting to, they don't know what they're supposed to think, and they look to us. Oh, if they like it, I guess I'll like it too. If they think it's stupid or annoying or overdone, then I'm going to just jump on that.
I told you
that.
I like your limericks.
You did.
Okay, so I'm not trying
I'm just saying in general, you know, they read the room and they're like, yeah, I guess that was bad.
Yeah, but I'm the one saying I like your limericks. If they're reading the room, I say I like it.
Fair enough.
And I thought that mock headline was awesome, Todd.
Thank you.
God. It was a really good one.
I appreciate it.
Great way to start out the Monday.
But here it is on a Friday. It's a meet Friday. And then, you know, Todd's moping. And I said,
moping, but
oh,
I was in the early stages of moping.
Well, it's hard to tell, but I said, oh, my God. Are you, what are you reacting to? Your limerick? And he goes, yeah, there's trolls out there, and, you know, they read the room, and if you guys don't like it, I said, Todd, do I say I like your limericks? Yeah, but...
I was a baby a little bit on that.
How do you think they feel, though? They're being called trolls instead of people who just don't think it's funny.
Yes.
I mean, some people just don't think it's funny.
Do you think the people being called trolls are, like, moping right now?
Yeah, they're offended.
No. What's wrong?
No, but Paulie has a good point. If it's anything that's, like, contrary to the reaction I want, then they fall into the troll category.
Yes, Seton.
I feel like, you know, this may be a little narcissistic of me or paranoid or something, but I feel like Todd is sort of speaking around me while being in the same room as being the... You know, they read the room about people who don't like the limericks.
Well, it's not just you. Everybody, you know, makes comments or rolls their eyes or whatever because they're very specific on social media.
It's true. It's not just him who doesn't like the limericks.
Yeah, there's a lot of other people.
That was almost starting to feel bad, but now I don't.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR, or stream us live every day at youtube.com/The Dan Patrick Show.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sports book, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mark Jackson was on the call yesterday, game 4 of the Nets and the Bucks in Milwaukee. And the great Mark Jackson joins us on the program. Good morning, Mark. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me. It's been a long time.
How would you sum up the Bucks-Nets yesterday, game 4?
I think the Bucks ultimately, you know, was committed to being a lot more physical, getting into the bodies of not just Kevin Durant, but the Nets in general. They had tremendous success doing it, took them out of rhythm, and they were in attack mode offensively. Giannis wasn't messing around, and he was more of a playmaker, mixing it up, getting guys involved and attacking the rim. And it allowed other guys to get going, and it allowed him to get going. So it was a perfect day for the Milwaukee Bucks yesterday.
What should the game plan be for Giannis and his approach? And certainly he's a different player, it feels like, in the playoffs than he is the regular season. But how would you have him attack the Nets?
Well, Jeff Van Gundy and I agree, but we disagree. He thinks he should shoot 0 3-pointers, or he should shoot 100. It should be because he can get that shot anytime. And I understand that mentality. But my feeling is I don't have a problem with him shooting, you know, 2 or 3 3-pointers in the rhythm of the game. So he's attacking the rim. He gets a dunk. He gets a layup. He gets an and-one. And all of a sudden, the next time down the floor, he thinks he's got it going. And he feels comfortable and confident. And he steps into a rhythm three. I'm fine with that. I think he's got to ultimately not take a bunch of them unless he's knocking them down, because you're doing the Nets a favor. You're playing into their hands. So he's got to be in attack mode with the mentality of not settling on the offensive end, especially early, setting the tone. And then he's got to be a willing passer, take the double team, and hit guys in rhythm on point, where those guys got to be confident and knock down shots also. So it's got to be a mixture of both in my mindset.
What is it with some of these players at the free throw line? And Giannis is there, and he's like paralysis by analysis. And then you got Ben Simmons as well. And are these all fixable, coachable things?
To me, they are. And it's minimizing the movement. It's minimizing the amount of time. I mean, you stand at the free throw line, over 10 seconds, and you're sitting there for what? I had a routine, but I didn't do a routine when I practiced, and I just, to be quite honest, I just did it just so that I could be remembered one day by the guy that held his hand up at the free throw line. It would be harming him. Well, I know it wouldn't be harming him if he cut the routine short and stepped up to the free throw line and maybe 5 seconds took a shot. He couldn't be any worse. So I think it is paralysis by analysis. They're overthinking it, and they can be much better free throw shooters if they obviously they put the time in, but you get a shooting coach with them and you develop routines and habits and they will become better. I don't know if they'll ever be 90 or 95, but they certainly would be better.
But it's hard to be the guy at the end of a game if I can't have you handle the ball because I don't want to put you on the free throw line, or I can't have you go to the free throw line. And, with Ben Simmons and with the Greek Freak, these are marquee players.
I understand what you're saying, but I disagree because I played with a guy like let's say Dale Davis, a tremendous power forward that I played with that was a historically bad free throw shooter. But as a team, we didn't care whether he got fouled down the stretch because one thing we knew, he wasn't afraid to shoot the free throw. He was going to step up, and if he made a miss, it wasn't going to be because he was afraid.
Yeah.
So you don't want guys that's going to be afraid of the moment. Like Ben Simmons, I don't see Ben or Giannis afraid to shoot the free throws. So you develop the right habits, and then you make sure as a coach, I put them in position that where, okay, we're in the bonus. I'm not putting the ball in Ben Simmons' hands, understanding, that they're going to foul him and send him to the free throw line. Unless he's got a rhythm and we got a comfortable lead, then okay, you want to play that game? We can play it. But I'll develop some things to keep my best players on the floor.
If you're Steve Nash and I said you could have your choice, you could either have Harden back with Durant or Kyrie back, who would you take?
I want them both.
No, you can't
right
have
now,
both.
Well, the game's tomorrow. I want James Harden because I don't think that Kyrie Irving physically would be able to play tomorrow. But I think it
Let's
makes
say
it
they're
easier
both healthy.
With just –
Let's say they're both healthy.
Oh, here you go. When I said I was going to do the interview, I said, this guy's going to ask me a question and force me to answer something. I don't know what it is, but
I'm like Scottie Pippen guarding you, okay?
Yeah. No, you're worse. And that's saying a lot.
Wow. Scott, do you still see Scottie Pippen in your nightmares?
I see him all day long. What are you talking about? My nightmares. When I'm awake, I see him. I look back sometimes and just swat his hands off of me.
Was he the best defender?
He was an incredible defender. I think when you look at a guy like Gary Payton, when you look at Michael Jordan, when you look at Hakeem Olajuwon, I mean, those guys were elite, all-time great defenders. Alvin Robinson was a great defender.
Would you rather have Jordan guard you or Pippen?
I would rather have Jordan guard me if you said he had to guard me the whole game. And it's not a knock on his defensive, mentality and how great he is defensively. Scottie Pippen could, dog me the full length of the court and dog me for whatever amount of time I was on the court because he didn't have any pressure on him to carry the load offensively. If you ask Michael to do it, just like Phil asked Kobe to do it in the finals in 2000, Kobe was great at it, but he wasn't Scottie Pippen because he was trying to, get 40 on the other end. So it's a different mentality and it's a different commitment when this is what I have to do to win this game.
He's Mark Jackson, ESPN, NBC, or NBA analyst on ABC. Are you third in all-time assists?
Right now I'm fourth. Steve Nash is one ahead of me.
Oh.
But when you say, oh, wow. When you look at the list of guys that surround me, I pinch myself. That's when I get, it really is unbelievable. I've got no business on that list.
Do you think that Nash wanted to get one more than you and then retire?
No, I don't think it. Okay. I don't think it at all.
Okay.
I know it.
I got Chris Paul at 50 assists behind you. I think he's going to catch you. That?
Oh, way to go out on a limb.
But LeBron is 300 behind you. I think he's going to catch you.
Wow, you are really feeling yourself today with the predictions. You like Charles Barkley with the guarantees.
Paulie, is there anybody else who can catch Mark Jackson here before he gets kicked out of the top 10?
I didn't want to pile on, but Russell Westbrook is about a year away, year and a half.
Oh, man.
I mean, but think about the name. Everybody that surrounds me, they're Hall of Famers or first ballot Hall of Famers. Are they already in? So it's absolutely remarkable. Like I said, I'm honored to be in that position and to be discussed with those guys.
Are you a Hall of Famer?
I'm not in the Hall of Fame.
But do you think you should be in the Hall of Fame?
That's not up for me to discuss.
No, it's you. Do you think, like if you ask me, do you think you're better than Bob Costas? I can't go, well, that's up for others. You just ask me.
Well, what's your answer?
You answer mine, then I'll answer.
Well, I finished my career at second all-time in assists, I humbly submit.
Okay.
And to think about all the great players that have played in the history of this game, to be second all-time in a main category says a lot.
Yeah.
And it's an incredible feat for me. And I'm fine with where I am in history, and I'm at peace with it.
All right.
Did that answer your question? Now, what about you and Bob Costas?
Bob is better at certain things.
Oh, my goodness. I don't need all of that.
Do I think I'm better than Bob? I'm different than Bob. It'd be like me comparing you to Steph Curry. You both play point guard, but you do it differently.
Hold on. Let me give you your address. I'm gonna send you a free. I'm gonna send you a free dog with a leash. I mean, you scared? Come on, man.
No, I'm not. I own a dog. I got a puppy, Mark. I bought a dog. I did. I got a rescue.
Who would you take anybody's answer? Well, he's better than me in certain things. In certain areas, I'm stronger than him. No, you wouldn't.
I
that's not the Dan Patrick I know and love. I'm not listening to interviews. So what? I got your back.
I'm trying humility. It's something new for me. Okay.
That's true. That's true.
Okay.
Because when we would go out, you'd be like, yeah, Bob, I can't hold my jockstrap. No way in the world. I'm better than him. No question.
I know. That is true.
I don't mean to tell your business, but you, know,
you just did. You just did. And you said you should be coaching the Knicks, that you're far better than Thibs.
Don't do that. Don't do that.
Oh, now I can't talk out of school.
No,
okay.
With me saying that, they'd be like, oh, that's Mark throwing a bad, you know, good joke at Dan. With you saying it, it'll run via headlines.
What do you expect to happen with the Jazz and the Clippers? Because I have no idea how to handicap the Clippers right now.
It is tough to handicap the Clippers, and that's the worst thing you want to have as a coach or a player on a team. Who can I trust? Who can I go to? Who's going to show up? How are we going to play? It's unpredictable. They can very well win a championship, and they could very well lose in this round. It's unfortunate. But this is a team, I will say this, they don't lay down. I mean, they got down the previous series. They bounced back against Dallas. They're down against Utah, bounced back with a big win, and another win, you know, in the next game really changes things. But the Jazz, it's an outstanding team. I say they're the second team, you know, obviously the Warriors with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and their ability to shoot. So many teams are shooting threes, but there's only two teams in my mindset that have the ability to have shooters on the floor, and they're great shots every time. The Utah Jazz are loaded with, you know, four, five, six shooters on the court, and the Warriors obviously have two of the best, if not the best, to ever do it.
Chris Paul and Kevin Durant, certainly Chris Paul bringing back the mid-range jumper, Mark. Do you think the mid-range jumper will make a comeback?
I don't think it should have went anywhere in the first place. I understand the analytics and what it says about the three-point shot, but give me a basket. Give me Chris Paul shooting a mid-range jump shot as opposed to, you know, Mark Jackson shooting a three-pointer. He's going to make those at a high clip, and he's going to punish the defense, and they're going to have to make the proper adjustments.
Yeah, I like it. If they're going to give it to you, then take it. You know, KD takes that mid-range jumper, and it's either somebody taking it to the hoop or somebody shooting a three. And I like that logic.
And even the guys not named Chris Paul or Kevin Durant, if the teams are going to back up off of you, like Giannis, if the teams are going to back up off you in the day to shoot a three, okay, establish a rhythm. Step 2 feet in, take a mid-range jump shot. It's an easier shot, and it allows you to gain a rhythm. So it's no coincidence why, you know, those two guys and these teams that embrace, you know, shooting mid-range, like the Phoenix Suns have a legitimate chance of winning it all because partly of Chris Paul's mid-range game.
Michael Malone, the Nuggets head coach, said that Chris Paul arguably the best point guard of all time. And I don't know if Michael has done a lot of research here on great point guards in the game, but it seems like a recency bias there, Mark, that you just lost to Chris Paul and the Suns. Magic was pretty good, right?
Yeah, it's I laugh, but I don't laugh at the greatness of Chris Paul. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer, and he's had an incredible career, and he's certainly amongst the list of the top point guards ever played this game. But he's not.
But he hasn't won. He hasn't won. Like,
yeah, I don't think that has anything to do with it, because we don't say that when we throw John Stockton's name in there. He's certainly an all-time great point guard, and he's on the list also. But we don't hold that against him, and we shouldn't.
Well, he went to two finals. He lost against Jordan.
So see how we tape the argument. He didn't win. He didn't win a championship.
He didn't.
That's the argument. That's the argument. Chris Paul winning a championship will not make him the greatest point guard to ever play the game in my mind.
No,
and
it won't.
Again, we're talking about great, great talent and great, great, historically great players. Magic Johnson is the greatest point guard that's ever played this game.
All right. And second on that list is who?
In my mind, it's Isaiah Thomas.
Okay.
And the guy, think about what he did. He was, and I faced him, so that's part of the reason I can say it. I watched everybody, and I faced him, and he was absolutely, absolutely great, great, great.
Yeah, but you made him successful by guarding him.
We don't need to go there, though. The question wasn't how did he get.
Oh, okay, my bad. Is Steph Curry a point guard?
Yes, he is, and he's on the list. He's in the discussion. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer, and he's an absolute, you know, franchise superstar talent.
He doesn't lead his team in assist.
He is a point guard. I coached him, and I put next to point guard Steph Curry.
Okay. So you got Magic and Isaiah. Is Steph Curry the third greatest point guard of all time?
He's in the discussion. Then you got a list of guys that comfortably fit in the discussion where you can place them 3 through 10.
All right. Who's third?
I don't know who's third. I haven't looked through the list yet, but you got guys.
You play
like
the position.
Stockton,
you know who's.
You have guys like Stockton, Kidd, Nash, Curry. Am I forgetting anybody?
Russell Westbrook,
forgive me, Chris Paul.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to throw those guys in the discussion, and then it's which flavor do you like? They're all in the same area, and they're all historically great talents.
Now, who else are you putting in there? Charlie Ward, Muggsy Bogues, anybody else that you're putting in there, Mark?
No, see,
I'm
fair, but I'm firm.
No,
I'm fair, but I'm firm.
Come on.
You have the disease of greed. I gave you the top two without wavering. Now you want to go through the list of top ten.
I'm just curious.
Why can't we just enjoy?
How about top five? Is that asking a whole lot?
No. I gave you my answer. When you talk about the first two,
all right.
I got a clear-cut answer.
It's soft, man.
I know who's not in there. Dan Patrick is not in there.
Yeah.
Top 10 point guard of all time.
No, I'm a shooting guard.
I saw your game.
I'm a making.
You're talking about free throws because you're a knockdown free throw shooter. We're well aware of that.
Yeah, yeah. Should I be able to shoot better from the line than the Greek Freak or Ben Simmons?
Yes, because you had a full court hoop in your backyard since you've been 1 year old. You lived in the suburbs. You've been, you know, you had the good life.
All right, you're right about that.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, it's great to talk to you again, and I'll talk to you in a couple of years, okay?
No, don't do that. Great talking to you, man.
Thanks,
stay well.
Buddy. That's Mark Jackson. Third on the all-time or fourth on the all-time assist list? You know, Mark's a Hall of Famer. he won't say it, but he was second all time in assists when he retired. Yeah. And now, he didn't average double figures, but if we're going to argue Robert Horry with what he did and winning those championships, I mean, Mark's second all time to John Stockton. No shame there. Yeah, Paul.
I'm just presenting facts here because I like Mark
That's
Jackson.
That's what we do.
Mark Jackson played on a lot of teams. He did like four or five years and 2 years. Mm. He made one All-Star game in his career, which really hurts. He lacked consistently for one team, continuity, I guess.
Yeah.
He'd do 5 years for the Knicks, then 2 years for the Clippers, and 5 years for Indiana. He had a really good run in Indiana. Really relevant run.
Yeah, I know.